Chapter 9. Ruth. Ruth stood naked in front of the full-length mirror in the hotel bedroom and let her fingers follow the pink line that ran horizontally along the bottom of her stomach. It was the longest and thinnest scar, but the one that had remained resolutely bright and keloid. The others were a mix of jagged little curves and some thick pink bumps, mostly on her stomach, some on her left side, one on her thigh and some on her chest. She counted them, all 17 of them. The long one, lowest on her stomach, was the scar Dr. Mosley had made when he'd opened her up. Same for the one on her side to repair the lung. Somehow, she didn't mind those scars. They were kinder. They were the ones that had kept her alive. She took a band from the dresser and put up her thick brown hair. It was getting too long. There was no way she could face going to the salon. She couldn't face a lot of things. She had not returned to work since leaving the hospital. She had not left the hotel room, not even once. And so the days had rolled into one long miasma of time, marked only by the weekends when Scott got a break from work on Sundays. She guessed it was around a month since she'd left the hospital, maybe more. The 9/11 anniversary had been on the Tuesday, and the attack had happened that Friday, September 14th. When Faro and Hernandez came to her hotel room to take her full statement, they kept repeating that date, September 14th, and then calling it the night in question, or sometimes the date of the incident. She supposed it was to make it clear exactly when this had happened for any prosecutor or cop reading it, but it had a strange effect on Ruth. Some dates in the calendar become haunted by their events, like 9/11. It has significance for the whole country, but she knew it held a cold place in the hearts of those who'd lost loved ones that day. They would look at the towers of light in the sky from Battery Park, not just with a deadening sense of loss shared by the city and the country, but with their own personal grief gnawing behind their eyes. 9/11 would now have an additional significance for Ruth. It would mark 3 days until her next dark anniversary. There would be no tribute in light on that date. She knew September 14th would have no light at all. Ruth shook her head. Who was she kidding? So far, every day had been September 14th. She couldn't get that man's face out of her head, and he was there every night in her dreams. Ruth knew the dreams had significance, as if her brain was reminding her of the events that had almost killed her, so that she would never forget the face of her attacker and never put herself in that danger again. She checked the date on her phone. Ruth had been meaning to check the date for days. This evening was the first time she felt brave enough. It was nearly November. 6 weeks had gone by since September 14th, but it didn't feel that way. All of her scars were still raw, not just those on her skin. She heard the shower stop and quickly put on her bathrobe. She still couldn't wear underwear. The waistband grated against her scars. She got into bed and grabbed the TV remote. Scott emerged from the bathroom in a cloud of steam, wearing only a towel. His hair was still soaking wet, along with his short beard. Ruth wasn't sure about the beard. It was a change, but she had more on her mind and couldn't bring herself to object. It felt rough on her cheek when he kissed her, itching on the back of her neck when he held her during the night after she had woken screaming. She wondered if he would bring it up again tonight. Scott wanted to go home, go back to the house with her. She'd worked hard to buy that house with Scott. It was supposed to be their dream home, the house they'd grow old in, the house that they'd bring their baby home to, the house where Ruth would draw lines on the doorframe above their child's head to mark their height on their birthday, same as her mother had done. Now, it was the house where she'd almost been murdered, and her future, their future, had been stabbed to death in the hallway. There would be no baby for this house, no pencil marks on the doorframe, no sound of small feet on the parquet floor. The house had changed. It wasn't safe now. It had no future. It was a grave for all the children she would never have. And yet, part of Ruth didn't want to let this monster have her house. She had decorated every room, chosen the floor, oiled it twice a week, picked out every painting and every piece of furniture. The monster shouldn't be able to take her house, too. He had taken too much already.
You want to watch Jeopardy? Asked Scott.
Okay, said Ruth, finding the right channel. The volume was way down, and she turned it up a few notches.
Are there any snacks left?
Asked Scott, opening the mini fridge. Not many. I got hungry this afternoon. There might be some pretzels, said Ruth. He closed the fridge, knelt and opened the little cupboard beside it.
Nope, looks like you went through the pretzels too, honey.
Sorry, said Ruth.
It's okay. I'll go get us some in a second, he said.
But you'll miss the show, said Ruth. She didn't want anything. She still felt a little sick from the snacks she'd eaten for lunch.
It's fine. I'll go to the vending machine at the end of the hallway.
There's a vending machine? Said Ruth.
Yeah, we passed it when we checked in.
Ruth had not left the room since they'd checked in, nor had she let anyone in. The maid left fresh towels on a tray outside the room, as per Ruth's note. Ruth left the used ones outside the door each morning. Twice a week, she asked for fresh bedding. Scott didn't like her changing the sheets. She said it was light work. She was fine. Ruth was far from fine. She thought back to the day they'd checked in here at the Paramount Hotel, having to pass strangers on the street as she moved from the car to the hotel, then the lobby, and all of those people just standing and sitting around. There was nothing untoward about them, just guests and tourists going about their business. And yet, the thought of it made her skin crawl. She remembered the vending machine now. They'd got out of the elevator, walked down a long hallway, turned left, and found themselves in another chamber, with elevators at one end and the vending machine, then straight through, past four doors, to their room at the far end. She looked at Scott, handsome, well-built, strong. She felt much better when he was with her. He had to work during the day, and his boss was understanding after the attack, letting him have some time off. He'd returned full-time now. Some nights, Scott wouldn't get back to the hotel until past 7 or 8. Those were the worst times. She wanted him with her before it got dark. He toweled his hair, shaking droplets of water everywhere. She heard the hollow patter of those drops falling on the stack of pill boxes piled up on the dresser. Another new addition to her life. Ruth now had to take pills every day, 2 in the morning, antidepressants to fight off the demons, 1 pill in the afternoon, a mild antipsychotic, and 1 at night to help her sleep.
I'll go to the machine in a second. What would you like?
He said. Ruth thought about the vending machine in the hallway, 40, maybe 50 feet from their room. The hallways would be quiet, not like the morning rush down to breakfast. Room service and Scott bringing in pizza or Chinese food was all that Ruth was eating these days. The vending machine was just outside. She could keep the door open with her novel, be able to see the light from the room. 40 feet. 1 minute at the vending machine, tops. Ruth got up and put on her loose, high-waisted sweatpants, the ones Scott bought for her at Macy's, so she could have something comfortable to wear leaving the hospital. She put on one of Scott's t-shirts, then the white toweling bath slippers.
Do you have some ones? She asked.
I'll go to the machine. Scott stopped rubbing the top of his head with the towel, looked at Ruth. He smiled, then tried to hide it. He knew it was a big thing for her. Her first steps outside of the comfort of this room in 2 weeks. Important, very important. But he shouldn't play it that way. If he built it up too much, Ruth might lose her nerve. All of these thoughts played out on his face like a movie screen. After 5 years of marriage, Ruth knew how to read him.
Sure, in my jeans, he said.
Ruth found his jeans in the bottom of the wardrobe, fished in the pockets, and found $12 in singles. She turned to the door. Her book, she almost forgot. She retrieved the Patricia Highsmith novel from the bed, stood in front of the door. Money in one hand, folded, book in the other. Ruth knew every grain of wood in that door. The dark swirls in the oak veneer just below the peephole, the evacuation notice pinned above that, framed in gold-painted plastic, the selection of door signs that hung on the handle. She had studied that door like a prisoner looks at the door of their cell. Only Ruth didn't want freedom. She didn't want to step beyond. She loved the door, how solid it felt. And she hated it. Ruth took a breath, let it out slowly. Then she opened the door, took two steps forward, and peered out. No one in the hallway. She turned, placed her book at the base of the frame so the door couldn't close, then quickly straightened up and turned round, fixing her eyes on the hallway, fearful in case the situation had changed. There was no one. The patterned carpet was richer here, deeper. Her toweling slippers sank into it. Another breath in, out. She stepped forward, knowing that at some point, Scott would probably come to the door and watch her through the gap. That made her nervous, but also slightly braver. He wouldn't let anything happen to her. Ruth kept moving forward, slowly, picking up the sounds of TVs as she passed one door, then another. She developed a rhythm. Breath in, step, let it out, another step. Her hands were rigid by her side, tensed, her fists clenched. Dollar bills in one fist, the other she felt her nails sticking into the palm. She reached the end of the hallway, slowly glanced left at the elevator bank around the corner. No one there. Just ahead and 2 feet to the right stood a vending machine. It had water, soda, candy bars, potato chips, and nuts. She stood still and listened. Distant voices, the muted thump of a drawer slamming, a door closing, the ghostly echoes of someone shouting, the music from a TV commercial. Once she reached the vending machine, Ruth began to feed it with $1 bills. All the snacks were on display behind the glass, held upright by coils of black plastic that spun them into freefall when she made a selection. Ruth typed in the codes for her favorites and Scott's. She inserted another dollar and selected Orange Fanta, and it landed with a clang in the bottom drawer. There was a collection of items there now behind an aluminum flap. She hit the coin return, listened to the rattle of dimes and quarters hitting the change slot. As she bent down to retrieve her change, the ceiling light hit the glass of the vending machine. She saw something, something that froze her body stiff. In the glass, she saw her reflection and the distorted face of a man standing behind her. Her mouth was open, sucking in air in a great gasp, and then she couldn't let it out. The oxygen turned to cement in her chest. Her eyes were wide, staring, her body unable to move, her voice strangled in total panic. Suddenly, the lizard part of her brain took over, the back brain. For Ruth, it started with shaking, as the fear pounded through every blood vessel, getting her heart rate up, screaming at her to move. She jumped up and half turned. Her chest opened, and she let out a shriek that quickly filled the hallway in a long, high-pitched scream. As she turned, she saw the old man step away from her. He was in his 80s, wearing a brown cardigan and slippers. He raised his walking frame as he stumbled backwards, surprise written large on his face. There was only the old man, no attacker with sharp features and electric blue eyes. She felt strong hands grab her, and she shrieked again, clawing at them. But then she focused her eyes and saw that it was Scott. He was getting further away from her, as if he was falling into the ceiling. But then she realized he wasn't the one moving. She collapsed, and the hallway carpet started swimming around her. Within minutes, there were people all around. She recognized one of the receptionists who'd checked them into the hotel, the blonde with the big red lips that barely moved as she spoke. Ruth could smell something foul and powerful, smelling salts. She'd felt quite faint, but the salts brought her round, helped her focus. "There was someone behind me. I'm so sorry, I just panicked."
"It was just Mr. Perkins," said Scott,
pointing behind him to the sheepish-looking elderly guy in the cardigan. Someone had brought him a chair. There were more people around her, hotel staff, other guests. Her head hurt, and there was a terrible taste in her mouth. She apologized to the elderly man.
"Don't worry, honey. I move slow and quiet with this walker. I didn't mean to startle you."
"I didn't mean to frighten you," said Ruth. Ruth had never felt so small, and yet Mr. Perkins somehow made her feel okay about things. She was frightened, and that was all right. She had Scott to protect her. That was all that mattered.